Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing. Always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true transparency pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
We want to welcome to the show Greg Bishop from Sports Illustrated. Wrote a very interesting piece on former Titans quarterback Jake Locker. Greg, thank you for coming on today. We really appreciate that and appreciate the time. How are you?
I'm doing well, guys. Thank you for having me.
Yes, sir. Really fascinating piece, and it's an interesting guy, Jake Locker. We know that having covered him when he was here. What was your experience like through this process of visiting with Jake Locker and getting to know him?
You know, I would say it was truly unique. You know, mostly what I do for SI, I write longer NFL stories that run in the magazine, you know, maybe 15 a year. And I do a lot of, like, reaching out to people like Jake just to see if they would want to talk to me. It took a long time to convince him to even meet with me. And when I did, it was just really interesting. You know, it was everything from, like, him insisting on paying for lunch to, like, him, like, pouring his heart out to me and then telling me he still wasn't sure he wanted to go public with it, to even, like, when I asked him for phone numbers of people that I could call to, like, you know, talk to them about their version of what happened to him. He said he didn't really want to, like, lay anybody out because he didn't want to steer me in any certain way. He wanted me to come to my own conclusions and write whatever kind of story I wanted. And even this week, when the story's finally going to run, I filed it actually in December, and we just held it until the draft issue. And I reached out to him and said, hey, do you want some copies of the magazine? It's finally going to be in there. And he just said, you know, I hope we stay in touch. I mean, he didn't even, I don't know if he read it today. He didn't want any copies of it. He didn't really even want to participate in it. And yet it was just such a remarkable story. I think that's really what I took away from it.
It's amazing to think about a first-round draft pick who just decides to leave the game after 4 years. He's been out for 3 years, still not 30, 29, right? What were you hoping to learn about him in this process?
You know, what I hoped to learn most was just what, you know, why he had left. I thought it was so unusual, not just that a first-round pick was stepping away, but like you said, it was a quarterback. There's no quarterback in recent NFL history that had as much success as he did. And granted, there were injuries, there was down seasons. I'm not saying he was a Pro Bowler, but, you know, he won a few games. He threw 30 touchdowns. He had some really good starts. And nobody's ever walked away that quickly. So I really just sort of wanted to know why that had happened. I did not anticipate that he would ask me to bring my family to his house. I did not anticipate that we'd end up talking a lot about a religion. I was just sort of like, here's a guy that walked away. He never explained himself. And now we're talking 3 years out. And, you know, what was going through his head? What's he doing now? What's going through his head there? And so, you know, it was totally unexpected, but it was pretty standard what I was hoping for at the beginning.
Greg Bishop with Sports Illustrated, at Greg Bishop SI. We're retweeting this story. If you haven't read it, read it.
Yeah, great read. Reading the piece, one of the lines there was his angst over hero status. And throughout the piece, I felt it in the way that you wrote it and the way that you talked about what he said. When you spent so much time with him, was it that obvious that was a central part of what he dealt with?
Yeah, 100%. I think that some NFL players could sort of identify with the concept of, like, I think there are guys in the league who love football but don't love sort of the pageantry involved with NFL football, the level of, you know, media obligation, the level of appearances they have to do, all these things that sort of surround football but aren't really part of the game itself. And, you know, obviously, they make a lot of money, and, you know, obviously that's part of the gig. But it was just clear that Jake was wrestling with that, and from as far back as college, whether it was drinking to sort of not have to be this guy that everyone in Seattle considered a savior, or whether it was, like, having not great interactions with what he described with local media in Nashville, which he totally blamed himself for. You know, this idea that he really couldn't warm up to people, that he wasn't able to be authentic with them, that he just didn't like all this sort of things that came along with being a star quarterback. And yet at the same time, it required so much of his time just to be able to play at a level that was, you know, good enough to be a starting quarterback in the NFL. And so I think we were maybe only a few minutes in to our initial lunch when that started to come up, and it was something that was really threaded throughout, to the point where I think the main reason he stepped away is that he didn't want to deal with all that stuff anymore, and he felt like it was distracting him from his family and his faith, and ultimately he made the decision that the other things were worth more to him than the fame and everything around football.
Greg, this is Mickey Ryan. I'm the guy that reached out to you this morning. I certainly appreciate you taking the time to jump on with us. When you ask him about doing a story and he finally agreed to meet with you, he said you can do a story, but there are central themes that have to be at the front of this story, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, essentially he said more than once to me that he wanted God to be the main character in the story. Now, obviously that's tricky for me. We don't do a lot of stories where God's the main character. I sort of explained to him that I thought it was central to his story, and to me that's where the relevance and everything came in, that I wanted to tell his story, you know, the way it happened and not sugarcoat it or change it based on my own, you know, religious beliefs. And so that was the first thing. We talked through that pretty easily. God ended up being a pretty big part of the story as is. And then the second thing was I asked him if I could come watch football with him one weekend, and he said he didn't mind that, but only if I brought my family, which is pretty interesting because my wife is pretty much indifferent to football, which may sound weird because I cover the NFL, but she doesn't read any of my stories. She doesn't watch anything. She went to the University of Washington. She had no idea who Jake Locker is. And my son at that point was 2 months old, and he had like really never left the house pretty much. And like Jake was like, come this weekend if you want, and we'll host you for brunch. And his parents were super gracious, holding my son Blake the whole time. And Jake was playing with him, and we were hanging out with all his kids. And, you know, when I look back at it, I think he was really, rather than speaking about his experience, I think he really wanted to show me, like, this is my life now. This is why I'm happy. And I didn't even interview anyone that day except for his father. His wife declined. His mom declined. He had had enough of me at that point. And we just sat around and watched football and played with our kids. And, you know, I think I understood better his decision, you know, that afternoon than after any amount of reporting I could have done.
It was almost as if he chafed at the idea of him not being busy, or of not being busy after the NFL was a bad thing, that you could have a good life and it was just whatever your version of a good life is.
100%. And I thought that quote really kind of stuck with me. He was like, every time people would ask him, they'd say, hey, what, why aren't you playing now? You know, the Seahawks need a backup quarterback. They right now need a backup quarterback. The Titans could use a backup quarterback, you know? And he essentially said that he always looks at them kind of funny and says, why do I have to be busy to be fulfilled? And what sort of is busy? Because, you know, he's a football coach at his former high school. He is a guy who's like taking on online seminary classes. He works in a leadership role for a local company. He owns and operates the town gym, and he spends a ton of time with his three kids. And so, you know, in a lot of ways, that is a really busy life. It's just not busy in the way that we would typically define it. And I think that's one thing that Jake really very strongly voiced opposition to, this idea that things are supposed to be a certain way, that because you have an arm like his and you can play football like he did, that you should love everything about being a star quarterback, or that, you know, why would anyone walk away when he could still be playing now, even as a backup, making a couple million dollars a year? I mean, Chase Daniel just signed for whatever, like an $8 million contract. You know, he's as old as Locker is right now, and less accomplished in the NFL. So, you know, I thought it was interesting. Any sort of norm I expected going into the story, he kind of smashed to pieces pretty quickly. And then it was just a matter of trying to figure out what did he really think about life and football, and why he had stepped away.
Naysayer might look at this, read this piece or this article and say, oh, well, maybe, you know, if Locker, if his numbers were better, if he was more consistent, or maybe if he stayed healthier, you know, I wonder if he would still feel the way that he felt when it comes to the game and still would have walked away. To that, what would you say?
Yeah, you know, it's a fair question. I mean, those sentiments came up a few times on Twitter. I would say that you could probably, I mean, we looked at this, right, when we were doing the story and the editing process. I think I could name 20 quarterbacks right now that are on NFL rosters that are less accomplished, older, and you know, have done less in actual NFL games than Jake Locker did. I think that pretty easily you could make the argument that he could have at minimum been on an NFL roster, that he could, even if he wanted to come back next year, be on an NFL roster. And so then I guess it becomes a matter of, like, what's the line of demarcation, right? Did he step away because he knew he couldn't be a Pro Bowl quarterback? Like, that to me is a more fair criticism of the story. Like, did he step away because he knew he'd never be Tom Brady? Like, those to me are more relevant questions than, like, did he retire because he wasn't good? Because Blaine Gabbert's got a job, Tom Savage's got a job. I mean, every time somebody doesn't sign Colin Kaepernick, we tried out the 20 guys that shouldn't be playing quarterback in the NFL at all. I mean, the fact is there are 10 to 15 people walking this earth that can do that job at the highest level. And you could even say it's less than that. And they're always looking for guys that, you know, were in the first round that could come back and try. Tim Tebow got 4 chances to be an NFL quarterback, you know, and he won a playoff game. You know, a guy like Nick Foles was considered done, had actually decided to retire, and coming back from a fishing trip, got a text from Andy Reid to be a backup quarterback in Kansas City. You know, 2 years later, he's a Super Bowl MVP. And so, you know, I think those are fair questions to raise. I asked Jake about it. He said that I asked him, had you played for the Patriots instead of the Titans, would you still be playing? You know, no. Had you played, never been injured, would you still be playing? No. So, you know, to him, those aren't factors, but those are totally fair questions. And, you know, I think it sort of depends what lens you're looking at it with.
The influence that Matt Hasselbeck had on him was such a big part of the story, especially from a spiritual leadership standpoint.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Matt is a guy I've known for a long time, since I covered the Seahawks, you know, a long time ago. And he's always just struck me as the kind of guy that I think people, you know, are at least intrigued by and want to listen to. And, you know, I think at first their relationship was more like older mentor, younger quarterback, you know, hitting the bars in Nashville, you know, doing karaoke together. Matt told the story about how Rusty Smith and Jake got him pocket knives Christmas one year because they couldn't believe that, like, a guy his age, like, didn't own a pocket knife. And, you know, it ended up becoming something more than that, mostly because Matt induced, really, you know, Jake back to religion and really kind of changed his life. And, you know, we were talking about Jake, you know, for the story, and we ended up talking for, like, almost 2 hours. And it was, you know, mostly just about norms in the NFL, what people say their priorities are and what they really are. And, you know, my favorite quote in the whole story is when Matt says that everybody in the NFL, every coach he ever had, said that their priorities are faith, family, and football in that order, and that Jake's the only one he ever saw that really lived it. I thought that was pretty powerful.
Yeah, really powerful. And it's so fascinating, too, that, you know, you're drafted into an organization to compete with the veteran quarterback, and that veteran quarterback is actually the guy that really shapes and changes your life by introducing you to Jesus. I mean, that part was fascinating to me, that relationship between those two guys.
100%. And even if you extend that out, like, pretty crazy, right, that not only did Hasselbeck introduce him and change his life in so many ways, Jake would say, for the better, but it also ultimately is what led Jake to not playing, too, you know? And, like, this sort of introduction was the first moment that he thought, I'm a bad husband, I'm a bad father. And he means that sort of relative, you know, like his own experience, how he felt he should be versus how he was. And, you know, Matt told me he thought that he never met another quarterback like Jake, which I thought was pretty remarkable too, because Matt played for a million years. He's not the youngest guy in the world, and he has 400, you know, quarterback teammates. He probably legitimately played with 20 other guys, you know, and Andrew Luck's one of those guys. And,
yeah,
you know, some pretty unique, some pretty talented people. And to put Jake Locker in that kind of rare air, I mean, to me, that spoke to why I think Jake's story has resonated the way it has, even though his career was pretty unremarkable.
And for people who wonder, despite the injuries, despite anything else, this was fascinating to me. He told his agent, if anybody calls about me, I don't want to know. And people did call.
Yeah, 100%. Like, Cameron told me that, that's his agent, Cameron Hahn, and he told me that he got at least 10 calls. You know, the one that's been widely reported that I was able to confirm is that Chip Kelly wanted to try Locker out with the Eagles in the 2015 range. He saw him as potentially a guy he could use in a variety of ways. And even Indianapolis, there was the year that Luck got hurt, that Hasselbeck got hurt behind him, and Hasselbeck's coaches said essentially, you know, could you reach out to Locker and see if there's any sort of interest? And he did, and Jake said his answer is like, this is a serious answer that will sound funny, but he told him he had a softball game that night, you know, like a community softball game. And he just answered like, that's him saying, I'm not coming back, dude, that, you know, don't waste your time.
Wow, that's amazing. One of the quotes from Hasselbeck that has stuck out maybe to Titans fans a little bit is Hasselbeck's talk of Jake really getting a raw deal with so many coaches, with three coordinators in 4 years, didn't know who was in charge, coach, general manager, owner, and the quote that the organization was really bizarre and so far behind in terms of nutrition and everything else. That was coming from Hasselbeck. Did Jake ever say anything about the situation that he was actually put in from that standpoint?
No, he did not. In fact, he went out of his way to sort of not rip anyone. He made it super clear to me on a number of occasions that he didn't want me to use his story as anything more than his story. He didn't want it to be a reason that other players had retired. He didn't want it to be another story that was sort of hinting at what's wrong with football. And he went out of his way to talk about how much he liked so much of his interactions in Nashville. He even praised the public relations head guy there because he felt like you know, they had been really good to him, as that his issues were more with himself than anything. In fact, I think that he really seemed to like Ken Wisenhunt. He felt like they had really gotten on the same page that first year that Wisenhunt was there, his last year. And he loved what he changed about the offense. And he really was excited. And he had a great home opener. Maybe it was home. I can't remember if they're on the road or not. The first game they played the Chiefs, it was like probably the best game he played in the NFL. 270 yards, two touchdowns. Seemed like things were really working in his favor. And then he got hurt again. And so, you know, it was sort of that kind of afternoon is what he always loved about football. So, you know, I have heard from other people that I did check with some Titans sources and some people in the league to sort of see, to make sure that, like, we weren't just totally out on a limb in the wrong way with that quote. And then no one really said it was inaccurate. You know, the team declined to comment on it. And so I think what Matt is referring to mostly is just sort of the uncertainty there and, you know, some of the things that were outside of Locker's control, you know, in addition to the injuries and some of the, you know, the interceptions that, you know, that it wasn't just the fact that he didn't play that well, but he wasn't set up as well to succeed either.
Fascinating read, Greg. Greg Bishop, Sports Illustrated, why Jake Locker walked away from football and why he doesn't miss it. We tweeted it. Read it. Greg, thank you for the insight. Thank you for the time.
Well, thank you so much for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Greg, did your wife read this one?
You know, this is going to sound funny, but she has not read it yet.
Wow, I thought she would read it.
She told us, she shared it to her friends because I put a post this morning about how my son's going to be signing autographs for his SI debut, but she has not read this one yet, and I'm going to tell her that you guys asked. Maybe that'll push it over the top.
Thank you, Greg. Good luck, man. At Greg Bishop SI. Thank you, brother.